They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
What up, Doe? This is the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, the podcast where six random guys from around the British Isles come together to talk about anything and everything Detroit Lions. My name is Anthony Fitzpatrick, and I am joined this evening, as always, by my esteemed colleague, Ryan McCluskey, which can only mean one thing. It is time for the college football podcast once more. Already on to week four. Doesn't seem like a minute since this started. This is episode five. Hello, Rye. How are you doing today?
I'm all right, yeah. Sportingly, I'm not good. I had a disastrous weekend. Four games, three losses and a draw across my Lions, the Arizona, like I say, my college team and Bradford City. So I've had to endure some long, painful weekend in general, like I say. I got up at 3:30. I watched one game that kicked off at 3:30, one that kicked off at 1:15. So I've not had much sleep, and it was not worth staying up for.
That's the thing. If you ever want the definition of a passionate fan, then you only have to look at Ryan here. He supports a Pac-12 team who kick off the latest out of everybody in college. Obviously, the Lions on Monday Night Football. It's just been one of those weeks where everything just decides to rain down on you at once, hasn't it? But at least we were compensated with a very good weekend of college football yet again, giving us plenty to chat about this evening. So we've got a lot to go through tonight, so we're going to crack straight on. So tonight we're going to go through a tiny little bit of news, not much. We're going to have a look at the injury situation around the league again, because unfortunately, once again, there are a few bad ones. Then we're going to be taking a look at our summer safeties. Now, any of you who've watched our main podcast will have seen me and Ryan over the summer do a few draft podcasts for the 2022 NFL draft. That's actually where the idea for this show came from. And one of the groups we looked at was safeties, because obviously I think with the Lions, there is a good chance we will need one next year. So we're going to go through the safety, see how they're doing. This is in response to a question from one of our listeners. We'll work that in there. We're then going to have a look at week three of the NCAA football. Lots of great games to talk about in there. And then we're going to have a little discussion about players whom are meant to be going in the first round of the draft currently, but who maybe we're not sold on at the moment. Is there anyone we want the Lions to avoid as it stands? And then we're going to have a little look at week four coming up. So an absolute load to dig into. So we're going to drive straight in to the news today. And there's not too much that I've come across, really. It's just, for us, the Power 25 rankings have been upgraded, and there have been a few noticeable moves on this. Alabama and Georgia, once again, occupy first and second this week. They both won the weekend just gone. In the top 10, Penn State were the big movers. They've moved up to fifth. They were 10th before. There was a good victory for them we're going to talk about in a little bit. And some are really high movers into the top 25. So Michigan State, they moved up 14 spots from 33rd to 19th. Again, another team who have done really well this weekend and who we're going to mention a lot in this episode. Fresno State, they've moved up by 39 spots. It's an absolutely huge leap for them. They're up into 23rd, and Kansas State round out the top 25. They've moved up 19 spots to get in there. Rye, it's obviously third week of the season now. We're starting to get into the swing of things. You know, pretenders are starting to look like legitimate challengers. Is there anything surprising you've seen out of the rankings so far, teams you wouldn't expect to see up there, surprises in teams who are struggling? Because, I mean, Clemson dropped out the top 10 this week. They're struggling massively this season. What stood out for you looking at those rankings?
I think we're getting now to a point where the top 10 is kind of like almost in concrete, not like dropping out, but they're just shifting one above a few places. Like there's the odd change, but that will start like slowly simmer down as teams get into a thing. Like, say, from like 15 down to 25, it's a battle royale. There's teams getting chucked over the ropes and getting dumped out weekly now. This is where, like, one loss really hurts you. Like, say, about, but like, say, BYU, they had a notable win for their season. They jumped up a few spots. Ole Miss, like, you can look at their schedule and say they haven't really played anyone, but they're handling their business. And with some huge games coming up, they're positioned quite nicely. So we're going to see if they're legit or not, because that they do still have a big question mark above them. Fresno State got, like, say, a quite big landmark win, and they showed everyone else, like, say, the Mountain West. Some teams, again, like, fell off the place because they managed to capitalize on a few losses. So they might not be in there at the end of the season, but while they're there, they're going to enjoy it. There's a few teams that are in that 20 to 25 that I think will probably all leave next week, and five more will come in. Because, like I say, there's some big games with some still undefeated teams. So whoever gets the win is probably going to up into that top 25th place.
And what did you think the odds would be after 3 weeks that both Michigan teams will be firmly entrenched in the top 25?
I wouldn't even give you odds on that. I don't think they're going to stay there. Like I say, once the hard games kick in, but I'd say right now they're doing well. And between them, they've got possibly two Heisman runners. Like I say, they're for non-quarterbacks. They're on the periphery, so they're putting the team back, and so far they're delivering.
Absolutely. I think we're going to mention them both a lot today. So, you know, we'll move on. So yeah, that's the Power 25 rankings. Not much else really going on in the news noteworthy this week. So we're going to move on straight into the injury corner now. And there've been a few more noticeable injuries, unfortunately, this week. Starting again with quarterbacks. A lot of quarterbacks went down last week, but there's another one struggling now. UCF quarterback Dylan Gabriel. He's going to be out for an undisclosed amount of time after breaking his left clavicle on the last play of the game in his team's defeat to Louisville. Through three games, he's already thrown 814 yards, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. This is a huge loss, really, for UCF. They're 2-1. They've had a bad defeat already. This is a big loss for UCF, this one, isn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, this probably ends their season for me. I watched the game, or watched two or three quarters. They weren't good. Like, they really didn't look very good against Louisville. They were struggling to contain the run and keep Malik Cunningham in the pocket. Gabriel was very hit and miss. Like you say, it's never nice, like you say, because he was hoping to work on potential future draft stock, but his season is no doubt over. He'll need surgery on a broken collarbone. Like, this now kind of leaves them at a bit of a crossroads. Like I say, I don't know who the backup is, but there's no one really to call upon to just keep them chugging away weekly. I think Tyus Bowser, their starting star running back, he limped off in the game. He got an injury as well. He was in a blue tent for a while, so their offense could potentially have derailed within, like I say, just one game if they can't find someone suitable to step up and just take handoffs and protect the ball.
Yeah. I mean, you can't. He's on his day. Gabriel's probably one of the best quarterbacks in college. You know, he is that good, and that is his possible ceiling. And it is huge for them to lose him. I think in his place, they've got a true freshman called Mikey Keene, and obviously, that's a big step down from where you're at the minute. No true freshman wants to come into a situation like this, trying to win games. But we'll see how they get on. It'll be interesting because, as Ryan said, this might be it for their season now if they can't get anything going under there or get somebody else in to come and help. But moving on, a few other bad ones this week. So Kansas State, their defensive end Khalid Duke, he suffered a season-ending injury in their 38-17 victory over Nevada. He already racked up 6 tackles, a pair of sacks in the first few games this season. He's going to be a big miss for them. LSU defensive end Andre Anthony is going to miss the rest of the season due to an injury suffered in their game against Central Michigan. He got 3.5 sacks through the first two games. And in this game that he'd been playing, he'd returned a fumble for a 33-yard touchdown he was on his way to an all-SEC caliber season. The numbers he was already racking up. And for LSU, who've had a really up and down start, that's a massive loss for their defense. And then the last one, this is actually big for our next segment, because we're looking at safeties, and this guy was on our list of safeties to watch this season, and that was Oklahoma State safety Trey Sterling. He's done for the season. He's picked up an undisclosed injury. They've not said what it is during their game against Boise State, and he's done for the year, which is a shame, because he was possibly one of the top safeties in this class coming up. So I don't know what that is going to do for his draft stock. A few big ones there, Ryan, for teams who can ill afford to lose guys at their positions.
LSU can't afford to lose anyone at any position, because they've still not replaced everyone that left, 2 years ago in the draft. They were struggling. They were relying heavily, like you say, on that man anchoring that defensive line. Like you say, he was putting up massive numbers, was probably going to, like say, make an SEC, like at least a second team for the season. Like say, he was on pit costs for like nearly a 13, 14 sack season. So he would have like shot up the boards. But now that someone now needs to try fill in and try replicate that pressure. And that won't be easy. Like say, it's all right saying next man up, but that it doesn't always happen like that. Kansas State, they'd already lost their key starting quarterback, Skylar Thompson. So then when you lose a player on the defensive side of the ball, well, that's considered a leader, like you're really backed into a corner there. They got a good win, but like it's as they say with that Thanos meme, but at what cost? Like say they lost that player, and like now they're going to have to go through the season and replicate and try find someone to bring that production as well on the other side of the ball. Trey Sterling, like you say, we've got these other safety partner on the safety list. We're looking at them both, but that leaves a big hole opposite him now. They're going to have to find someone to fill in there at a key safe spot. Because I'd say for someone that will like to play, like we do, two safeties, if you can't just rely on going one high, like that's a big loss to them. And a lot of guys are going down that were relying on tape this year for the draft because they didn't have anything from last year. Like, so now you're going back 2 years ago, and like it's just not reliable enough to work off. So that's a real shame. Like, say, I hope he's going to be able to make hopefully recovery in time for a Senior Bowl, or at least the combine.
You would hope so. And as you say, like teams like Kansas State, Oklahoma State, they've had unbeaten starts to the season, if I remember rightly. So it's bad, you know, it's bad luck for them that they're losing such vital players, you know, after such good starts. But we'll have to see. As I say, next man up, see what happens. Rounding off this, not as bad, but De'Eriq King and CJ Stroud, they're the quarterbacks for Miami, Florida, and Ohio State, respectfully. They are both dealing with injuries to their throwing shoulders, which is not good, although neither are expected to enforce an absence yet. I mean, King's been struggling all season, and CJ Stroud, I know this weekend was an exception with the Ohio State run game putting up some massive numbers, but in weeks before, he's been having to throw so much. An injury like that doesn't bode well for him going forward if, once again, they have to rely on him, do they?
It doesn't, no, help him. Like I said, Ohio State have actually put him in a position where he's had to do more work than he's used to. His kid's like straight out of high school. The only thing about them is they've still got about another 3 5-star quarterbacks. So if you have to sit in this week, which I would do, the replication, it won't actually change that much. Someone will be able to step in and do a job. Like they've got guys there that are just as good, maybe if not better. On the flip side, though, Miami, they're in all sorts of trouble. Like I say, the head coach now is under severe pressure. De'Eriq King has been playing hurt with injuries for like the last 18 months. Like he just always picks up knocks and he has to play through it. And for someone that likes to run, his hip, that's bad because he's going to take shots there. Someone is going to aim at that and try to leave the pocket. He's going to get knocked out of the game pretty quickly. So their season is poised on the balance, an injury to him, and they'll be in all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I thought maybe it worthy just bringing this up. These, you know, the fortunes of these two teams could potentially hang on these guys, and they're just not the injuries you want at this stage. But we shall move it on now onto happier things. We'll get away from injury corner, and we're going to do the first of two audience request segments this week. So we're taking a look at our safety class from the summer. Now, this is on the back of a question from Ferg on Twitter. He writes for Lions on the Prowl Really good. You know, they have a really good podcast, really good website, lots of good articles up. He's a big follower of ours, and he advocates for us an awful lot. And we appreciate this question. He asked us, should he be on the soapbox for Kyle Hamilton, who is the widely touted Notre Dame safety? So I thought we'd do this question, and we sort of add in a little more and take a look at our safety class that we looked at from the summer, obviously minus Trey Sterling because of his injury, which is a shame. But we're going to start this off, and we'll talk about Kyle Hamilton. So as I say, he's a safety for Notre Dame. I'll just rack off his stats for this year so far. So 3 games, he's already got 12 solo tackles, 10 assisted tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 5 passes defended, and 3 interceptions. On his career as a whole, he's played 27 games, 90 solo tackles, 36 assists, 7.5 tackles for loss, 22 passes defended, 8 interceptions, and a return touchdown from one of those. Kyle Hamilton's legit. I don't think that's in doubt there, is it, Ryan? I think the question we need to ask from a Lions point of view, because he's been touted as a top 5 potential guy, and a safety has never been taken top 5 before. And so the question becomes, are the Lions going to be in a position to draft him? Obviously, maybe they might be too high at 2 or 3. You can't really be taking him there. And the second first round pick might not come quick enough, but he's a hell of a player, isn't he? But can you see a situation where the Lions would draft him, especially if he's so high?
Recently, like I say, I've been watching most of their games this year, and you know what? I've made the Cardinals sin of falling in love with a player. To take him would be so brave to take him. I'm putting it out there, I would take him at 3. Like I say, if we're there, which I think we're going to be picking in the top 5, I think he's one of the most best athletic profiles I've ever seen. Like, he's got the length, he's got strength, he's got good hips. He moves side to side as well when he's like coming over the top and helping a corner. That's where he does his best work, I think, when he's running towards the sideline, because he's got great hands. He keeps the feet in bounds. Like, he's just a pick machine. I would adore him on the Lions. The Lions have not had a playmaking safety since Glover Quinn. And we're talking like nearly, I don't care what he will cost, even if we have to move up from 3 to 2, from 4 to 3. I will use some of the spare space they've got, because I think he's going to be an instant starter. He's going to make plays instantly.
And
players will be guys that will not like it, but I don't care, because I think that DC, and I think he'll be brave enough like to take the flak for taking the safety so high. And I think we would be rewarded in that case.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the first uber hot take from the Roar of the Lions College podcast this year. Ryan would take Kyle Hamilton as high as 2 or 3. I mean, absolutely cannot deny he's an absolutely wonderful player. I mean, the first game against Florida State, he set the tempo, 2 wonderful interceptions. He balled out against Purdue this weekend. I know he put a massive hit on one of your favorite receivers there. I believe it's David Bell, and he's now in concussion protocol. He hit him and he put him down. It was a huge hit, but I mean, I guess that's what you want from your safeties. You want a big hitter who's athletic and can cover the field, and he can do absolutely everything. You know, I mean, the turn of pace for, I think it was his first interception against Florida State. He like ran the length of the pitch to pick off a pass, and it was just, he was gone and he was there. And like you say, it was just absolutely freakish to see from a safety. I'd definitely be on the Kyle Hamilton soapbox. Be, you know, everywhere you go, we need a safety like him. And if Tracy Walker's form continues this year and he carries on playing as he is, and you paired, you know, an informed Tracy Walker with Kyle Hamilton, you've all of a sudden got a very, very deadly duo at safety. I think the only thing for me is I probably wouldn't go as high for him, but if there was a situation where we could trade back maybe to 6 or 7 and still get him, that'd be a wonderful scenario for us, to pick up a few more picks and still get him. I think that would be the route I would take to get there. But you've seen with the guys who are meant to be top five so far haven't been balling out necessarily as much as we thought. So I wonder what the trade, you know, how much activity there's going to be for trade up at the top, especially in two or three if we're there. But, you know, we'll remain to be seen. But there's absolutely no doubt that he's a top-tier talent. And, you know, he's certainly got to be under consideration going forward. So with that, we'll move on to sort of our five safeties that we picked up, because there's still a lot of talent. Even if you don't go for Kyle Hamilton right at the top there, there's still plenty to go to. And the first of those guys, and probably safety two in this draft behind Kyle Hamilton, would be Bubba Bolden from Miami, Florida, the Hurricanes. So he's played three games this season. He's at 13 solo tackles, 10 assists, 2.5 tackles for loss, 2 passes defended. I know he led the team this weekend against Michigan State. He got nearly 10 tackles in that game, because Michigan State just offensively were an absolute behemoth this weekend, who just kept coming and coming at them. If we were to miss on Hamilton and not get him early and we were to get Bubba Bolden, I think I'd be a very happy guy at the moment, Ryan. I don't know about you, but he's had a good start to the season. The Hurricanes are known for producing top-tier safeties. I know they haven't for a little while, but especially in the 2000s, the amount of talent, NFL talent, that went on for good, successful careers from there was really high. And I've watched a little bit of him. I watched the Spartans game at the weekend. He did really well, and I think he's, you know, if he carries on, he's certainly going to be worthy of a first-round pick for me and a great backup to Hamilton if we miss him.
Do you know what? Since I've picked him and I've watched him, I've called it. And it's only because I think I see issues with aggression. I feel like he might be a bit of a penalty merchant. Like, I can see him drawing flags for being a bit overzealous sometimes, like, say, the head's not always in a great position. I love his aggression, his athleticism. He's like a missile, because he plays the run the best. And then when he's in coverage, let's say, we don't have to see him in coverage all that much and how well he does over the top if they like target him. So you sometimes get a limited tape. Like, I agree, like say, I think he would definitely help in the run game. Like say, we're someone that's trying to work on securing the box and help. He does come up and, like say, he's a big physical guy. He raps well, he hits hard, so he meets running backs well. I just want to see a bit more athleticism, like say, in coverage. I want to see that grade improve. But I'd say, like say, right now he's probably maybe safety two or three. Like say, there's that Joseph guy at Northwestern that I've not put on this list. But I'd say, yeah, he's in that, definitely that consideration of like late first, hopefully early second. He's definitely got a lot to work with. I think he's someone that's totally polar opposite to Hamilton. Like say, he's not super athletic side to side, but he brings that grittiness that you need. So I think he's going to be good to watch in the NFL. He's going to be great against these kind of running quarterbacks as well. He's going to hopefully try to keep contained. So he works better in this new evolving league, I'd say.
I do agree. Obviously, when you watch him, there are things that he needs to work on. But I think the problem with having Hamilton round is he's just that far ahead of everyone in everything. I think the drop-off seems huge when it's just the fact that Hamilton's just pure out elite already. I think, you know, it probably affects the way we look at some of these other safeties just because the standard's been set that high.
Yeah, like I say, we've been very much spoiled on Kyle Hamilton, and it kind of like puts blinkers on you. Like, you kind of like got tunnel vision. So it's kind of hard to see some of the safeties out there because everyone's so enamored with him. Looking at his draft stock, I've seen a lot of mocks and they're all nearly at 5. It's usually the Jags or the Eagles. They're the teams I've seen getting the most at number 5.
Yeah, it's going to be so interesting. I've said it already. I think he could break the record because 5 is the record for drafted safety currently. That's the highest one has ever been drafted. I think he can very easily break that, especially if, you know, Stingley struggles or Thibodeau continues to be injured and they slip a little. There's every chance he might be able to get in there. And if a team's desperate enough for a safety, I think they might take the plunge on him. But we will wait to see. We'll move on with this list now. And I'm going to hand this one over to you because this guy was your sleeper guy who you included in here. This guy plays for another Miami side. But this is Miami, Ohio. And this guy is Sterling Weatherford. Now, Miami, Ohio is a little bit of a smaller school, but, you know, nonetheless, you can still produce good players from them. So he's played 3 games so far. He's got 9 solo tackles, 9 assists, a tackle for loss, an interception, 2 pass breakups. He's been a really busy guy throughout 3 games so far. And I think, you know, you've struck possibly on a real dark horse here in the safety market.
Yeah, it's one of the things. Myles Mahio, they're not very good. Like, they're not having the best season, but he's someone that's been around a few years. I think he's played games at captain. He's the leader. He's very heavily relied on respect. He's good at looking at, like, say, he can read quarterbacks. Like, he's got a good eye for the ball. He's a well-rounder. I think he's better against the pass than Bolden, maybe. Like, say, he's not as aggressive when he comes up. So he works quite well as a single high safety. This guy is going to probably go in the middle to late rounds, but I think there's a lot to work there. Project, he's still got that nice lean frame that you look for, like Hamilton has. He's good at deciphering when it's zone, when it's like, say, man, and it's crossing. He can be a corner's best friend. I think he's going to be someone that they're going to look at that will select. He's going to get a ticket to the senior bowl, no doubt. He's going to be able to work with some NFL coaches. We're going to see what he's got to offer. I think he's someone that could project really well. I think he's had consistency. That's what I like. Like, he's played 3 or 4 years, so he's very experienced. He's that guy that will get you maybe 60, 70 tackles a year. He'll get you a few interceptions. I think he's got an interception every year. He forces fumbles, he gets sacks. So they move him around all over. Like, he's comfortable playing out in the box. He'll play on an island by himself, free safety deep if needs be. So he does what he's told. He listens well. And he's one of those, I think, natural born leader, because I think he has to be on a lesser known weaker defense.
Yeah, definitely. They say just his versatile. He seems to be, you know, his production in early season has been really good, and that's only going to be good for him going forward. And like you say, if he can get those invites to the right places, he's going to put himself in a window. I mean, as a Lions fan, is he someone, I know you say he's a later round guy, is he showing enough for you to be taking a flyer on him in the later rounds yet? If we don't go safety early, do you reckon he can contribute long term here?
Yeah, I'd say I think he'll also offer great special teams. I think he'll be someone that could excel on there. So a late round flyer would be well worth it. If he continues to tick over in this year and he does like make a senior bowl, has a combine, he could be someone that could really chew up. Like, say, you may have a fourth or a fifth on this guy. Like I say, it just depends on how well, I'd say, that he shows in the bigger games. He's going to have maybe two teams play some elite high level FPS teams, and that'll be the film that everyone looks at.
Exactly. So hopefully he's able to do well in those. But, you know, that is a name to look out for in the safety market. You're not going to hear it very often, but keep an eye out. He's definitely a late flyer there, and hopefully he carries on that level of production this year. Moving on, we're going to talk now. We've already mentioned about Trey Sterling at Oklahoma State. He's done for the year. He was part of a very talented safety duo that they've got there. And this guy's the second, you know, the second guy is on this list, and that is Colby Harvell-Peel. As I say, he's from Oklahoma State. 3 games played, 9 solo tackles, 9 assists, 1.5 tackles for a loss, an interception, a pass breakup. His interception actually was this weekend in their very, very narrow victory against Boise State. They won that 21-20. That defense was just able to hold out there. He's another who's having a really good start to the season, as has Oklahoma State in general. They've made a good start, but he's showing out well there. And I love what I've seen of him so far. And I don't know exactly where I'd be ranking him yet in terms of drafts, but I enjoy watching him play. I enjoy what he does. And he's certainly going to stay very highly on my radar if I'm looking at safeties going into the draft, Ryan.
I think now Sterling is gone, he's going to be getting more attention, because I think teams are probably going to look to pick on him. Like, say, when you have a good dynamic duo, like when I think of last year, you had Ardarius Washington and Morig, like those contrasting styles. This guy, Colby, I'm pretty sure this guy's quite small. Like, and Trey Sterling was a larger body, so like they had those contrasting free and strong safety. So it's going to be interesting to see now how he does when he doesn't have someone next to him that he knows well or he trusts, like a bit of a security blanket, because like players like that like to play together. They like to trust who's near them. I think he's going to have to show some more initiative. I think he's sure with 1.5 tackles for losses, like say that he's a sure tackler. He's able to get in the backfield. He can get those screens, those bubbles. He can decipher a play, shed a block. Like say he came up clutch, which is important. That interception helped a long way to sealing that game and keeping Boise State out. So when he was called upon, he managed to get the business done. And I think he's going to be someone that right now, like I say, he's probably got very minimal draft stock, but I think his ceiling's higher. Like, he's going to be able to grow a bit quicker because he's now going to have more focal points. He's probably going to get targeted more, so we're going to probably see his tackles go up. With that, I'd like to also conversely see tackles for loss and interceptions go up. If someone's going to pick on him, like, I think now is time to, for him to step up and show that he's not to be messed with and that he can be regarded in the same calibre as his teammate who's gone down.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think this will make or break him. This is easy when you've got a guy next to you, but then when you are the guy, you know, you are going to be shown up for what you are. Either you're going to sink or either you're going to swim. And hopefully, from what I've seen of him, I think he's more than capable of standing up to the challenge. And if he does, if he has a really good end to the season, even without Sterling there, like you've just said there, I think his draft capital is going to rock it. And he's certainly someone who is going to need to be in consideration. The thing with these first three guys we've had is you've seen they're all over the field. Tackles for losses, you've said, passes defended, interceptions. They're doing everything. They're just, you know, they're having effects on all facets of the game for a safety. And, you know, that's really what you want, someone who can do a little bit of everything to a high level. And that's certainly something that sticks out with the three we've done so far. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how he develops now Sterling's out. But hopefully, and I reckon, he's going to thrive under the pressure. But we will see. We'll move on to the fourth guy. So that is Jordan Battle from Alabama. Now, he's had probably the quietest season of the five guys we've got on here. He's played three games. He's got just four solo tackles and eight assists. That is it for the season. But for me, an Alabama defensive man, you know, an Alabama secondary guy, it's so hard sometimes to grade them because there are not many teams they come up against who are going to put massive pressure on them, just given that defense as a whole is really good. And they usually just overwhelm teams in games. So I don't see the stats there, as I say, but it's the same with Christian Harris, my linebacker, who I've got on my five to watch. Sometimes it's just a case of not really having as much to do as usual. What do you think about Battle so far, Ryan?
I like the tangibles. Like, he's got good length, he's got good size and strength. But as you say, right now, it's impossible to grade because you don't know if he's just showing a lack of effort. If Alabama just might say, when teams try to run on him, they very rarely get through the defensive line. And when they do, the linebackers mop it up. He's coming up to the line and he's probably not even getting involved in the tackle sometimes. They've already down. Teams just aren't taking shots because they're too scared. They don't like to take shots. Even though he's not been tested, I would be. I'd be throwing at him like, come on, you're not doing much this year. Let's show me you're awake. But no, he's been quiet in nearly every aspect of the game. And I think if it continues to go out through the season, even if Alabama do really well, it's not going to show well for the next level. Teams just aren't going to be able to have that sample size. So I'd say right now, if the season ended today, and with what it's previously done, it could very well go undrafted. Safeties are so hard to grade because who would have thought Ardarius Washington would have gone undrafted? We were watching the boards thinking, he's going to get picked now. Nope, he was a high-level. Ravens took him. Like I say, Maury got taken in the second round, his teammate. And those two had a good duo together. So it's hard to tell who's always doing all the work and who looks good because of someone else. So I think right now, like, there's going to have to be a game where he stands up and be counted for.
Exactly. I think this one comes under needs further examination because, you say, it's not really been in a position where he's been tested massively through the air. I know we're going to talk about Alabama later, but they did get scythed with the run game this weekend, which is a rarity for them, which does raise questions because obviously your safeties are a big part of defending your run, especially when they get through the D-line. So we'll wait and see. But, you know, the jury is out at the moment until bigger challenges come forward. The last one I've put on this list, obviously there was no Sterling there, so I've added my sleeper guy who was on there as well. And that was Lewis Seen from Georgia. Georgia have got a couple of very talented safeties there, although the main one they bought in over the summer has been injured so far. So Seen has been the main guy. He's played three games, eight solo tackles, nine assists, one interception, three pass breakups. He's done really well. This Georgia defense has only given up 23 points in three games, and they've played Clemson in that stretch as well. So they've been on fire. But over the weekend, he did an interview and he says, you know, we can still get better. I think he's been playing really well. I think that this is a guy who's going to rise up draft boards as the season goes, especially as Georgia are going to be in the national prominence. You know, they're ranked second at the minute. The schedule's not the worst in the world going forward. There's a good chance they can reach the playoffs and really shine on a big stage. But I think, you know, I'm really excited about this guy. I think he's got the potential to be one of the best out of all of these going forward. Have you been able to see much of Georgia's defense in him, Ryan?
I've seen a bit of him, yeah. And like I say, this man's taken the opportunity because I think it was the former five-star, the big West Virginia transfer. Didn't he go to Georgia that's currently out injured? Like I say, he was a star recruit, yeah. So like I say, this guy is taking full advantage of them. Like I say, when he might not be able to get back in the team because, like I say, you've got the pass breakups, you've already got an interception. This is a guy that's learning a new, like say, learning a scheme. Teams, once again, like I say, he's had a test already, just haven't. So I think when he came up against Clemson, DJ Uiagalelei tried to take some shots downfield, like say, and there was nothing going on. I think he just works really well in a solid unit. I think even though teams aren't testing, I think that's because they genuinely fear Georgia. I have Georgia right now as probably, I think, maybe the best team in the country. I have them just pipping as number one. I think that will only go forward, like I say, because they're not looking a lock for the potential college playoff. And I think he's going to get tested more, I think, as teams start to lock up bowl spots. For a few weeks, some teams will become bowl eligible already when they've got nothing to lose. Like I say, there's going to be some bigger tests that come. Teams are going to just go all out and just throw everything at them. So I think hopefully, like I say, he's going to keep this starting spot and make it his own.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm like you. I've liked Georgia since the start of the season. I think, you know, they were the one of the teams I expected to do really well. They had that big statement win, although it wasn't the prettiest in the world. They still got the win. They've got JT Daniels back from injury now, which is huge for them. So I think it's only onwards and upwards, and you're going to be hearing a lot more of the name of Lewis Seen going forward. So if you're looking for safeties, he's definitely a name that you need to keep an eye on. And with that, we will end our safety segment. I think it's safe to say, you know, we picked some good ones. You know, I know some of these were maybe some of the more well-known guys, but they're having good seasons. And there's certainly a lot of guys there who need to be under consideration if they carry on this way for the Lions. You know, I'd be happy with two or three of these guys right now. So we'll see what goes on. It's very interesting to take a deep dive on some of these positions and these guys maybe you've not heard as much of, but, you know, we'll move it on anyhow. And we're going to now take a look at week three of college. It's already the fourth game for some teams. We're already approaching nearly a third of the way of the season. So as we said at the start, some teams are starting to settle in. Teams we thought were maybe pretenders are starting to show themselves as actual players, not pretenders. It's really good to see, and there's a lot of shocks going on at the moment. So we're going to deep dive into this. Now, as we usually do, we're going to start off with a winners and losers of the week list. Ryan, I'll do this with you this week. I don't know if you've got any to start with, but, you know, give me a winner, give me a loser. Who immediately pops off your mind as a winner or a loser this week?
One of my big losers this week is Carson Strong, because Nevada finally came up against some decent opposition and they got handled. Like I said, they were blown out of the water by Kansas State. They could not hang with their offense or the defense. They didn't move the ball down the field very well. And he blew very hot and cold on the day. Like, for someone that was coming to gear well, like, I think he probably looked more human than he was this season. I think people were watching that game as well because they knew that this Nevada team looked good. Kansas State are no more. And in the end, it wasn't even close. So I don't think it helped what people think of him as a project quarterback.
Oh, that one hurts because he's in my top five there. I know, you know, we'll do this later because he's in my five to watch. I'm going to maybe raise a little bit of a defense to him later. But no, I do agree with you. I think Nevada, they are losers, and Carson Strong. It was a big game for them. It was 17-all until the third quarter, and then Kansas State just put up 21 unanswered points, and they were without Skylar Thompson, you know, their main quarterback. So there's no there's no justification there for losing that one the way they did. But I'll go into it a bit more later on when I'm talking about Carson Strong. In that case, we're talking about QBs, and I'm going to give us a winner of a QB who I've been actually watching very closely this week, because we mentioned in week one, just as a sort of a passing afterthought, but this is a guy who's breaking out huge and getting a lot of national media attention, and that is Jake Haener. This is the quarterback for Fresno State, another team who had a massive win this weekend. But through four games this year, he's got 106 completions on 144 passes. That's a 73.6% completion rate. He's got 1,464 yards, 10 touchdowns, just one interception. And add to that, he's got three rushing touchdowns as well. And before you start thinking these are all against garbage sides, out of these four games, they've already played two ranked teams. They've played Oregon, who are ranked third, I think, at the moment. And they've played UCLA, who had a wonderful start to the season. But he wasn't a name I'd heard of prior to this season. But now he's one of the guys I'm looking at most interestingly at the quarterback position. Fresno State are surprising a few people, me included.
Yeah, I think Fresno State, it's safe to say they're firmly in the Mountain West Conference Championship talk. Like, they had them, San Jose got Nick Stackel. But this is a guy, like say, that went toe-to-toe Oregon. What did he lose? What was it, 30, 38, 35? They hung with him all the way in the last couple of sets of the year. And like I say, we'll talk about result later, but they took down a big Pac-12 team on there, like I say, and it was, they've got a very impressive resume so far. He is not shying away from the challenge against some good defenses. He's putting up good numbers. Touchdown to interception ratio is probably most impressive. Like I say, if he's going to throw 10 touchdowns for every one interception, then he's going to finish the year up some huge numbers and probably the bonds of Fresno State history. Like I say, he's playing with no fear, and they're playing like they can't be beaten right now.
Exactly. You know, it's great to see something like this happen. You know, this quarterback appears from relative obscurity, and it's just now there's lots of people talking about him. I'm not sure when his draft eligibility is. I believe it may be this year. I'd be interested to see what his stock is like if he carries on the way he is. Because like you say, through four games, that's what, a third of their season. So a third or a fourth of the season. He could be aiming for about like 40 touchdowns, four interceptions. That's going to bring you to national prominence with numbers like that. And that would probably be over 4,000 yards as well.
Yeah, like I said, they'd be some of the highest numbers in the nation.
Yeah, so we'll see how he goes there. Have you got a winner for this week?
My winner this season so far this week is, I'm going with that quarterback on my own. This is Tanner Mordecai. He currently leads all non-Power 5 quarterbacks. He's got 6 touchdowns in 3 games. He had to sit behind Kyler Murray and Rattler. So he spent like the back of Oklahoma for 3 years. So he took the chance and thought, you know what, I'm going to move there. I'm going to see where else I can go. So he landed at a high-powered SMU Mustangs offense, and he is putting up Heisman numbers. Like, he and like a guy that has pissed off about sat on the bench for 2 years. Like I say, he's not here next year as well, so he's going to be a long round. I think he's like third in yards. He's like fourth in completion rate, like 72. He's got leading in touchdowns for a non-Power 5 quarterback. He's probably the best on 5 power quarterback in the nation right now, and they have a huge game this weekend. They've got the Skillet Derby. They get the Rusty Skillet for the winner in the Texas Derby against TCU, who's also unbeaten. So that is going to be a game to watch. I think he's going to light up that defense.
Yeah, for sure. Tanner Mordecai is a name that you need to start associating yourself with. I know I've seen you mention him a few times, so I've sort of looked at him through that, and as you say, his body of work so far is really, really impressive. And, you know, for a guy who's got a chip on his shoulder about sitting so long, he's sure as hell taking his opportunity now. So he's another like Haener. You're just waiting to see, you know, just how well they do this season, because, you know, they could be shooting up draft boards all over the country if they carry on the way they are. It's going to be really interesting to see. And I want to see that game if possible. You've mentioned it now, but that's certainly one that's one to watch this when it arrives. So should be a good one, and hopefully it's another good outing for him, because again, his profile is only going to go up if he shines in that one. I'll go with my second winner. So my other winner this week, and I'm only going to keep it brief because we're going to talk about them soon, but Michigan State winners for this week. Obviously, they've won their game against the Hurricanes, Miami. I think it's their first win over a ranked opponent like that for a very long time. We were skeptical as to whether this early season form of theirs was going to continue coming up against harder opposition, and they absolutely blew them away. And it's just now a matter of wondering just how much hype to put behind them, because I know Miami haven't been the best this year, but they still represent huge opposition for a team like the Spartans.
Yeah, it's hard. You don't want to get too wrapped up, because like I say, it's lost to come down to earth and Sparty fans will suddenly be hating on them again. But right now, like I say, if anyone underestimates them, Kenneth Walker's going to run right over you. And I'll finish with, I think, the beast loser of the week, unfortunately. It's come out that Utah journeyman Charlie Brewer, who's been around for 4 or 5 years, was benched in a loss at the weekend, and he announced that he's in the team very suddenly over the weekend. Now, it's weird because it didn't say he was entering the transfer portal. It said he's just left the team. Apparently, I think he could have a redshirt year. He could have like 6th year of eligibility. It could be one of those guys that's about 25, 26. But it remains to be seen with football. Like I said, they had a bad loss. He got benched. I don't know how well he's handled it or where's his head at, but I hope he's all right. Like I say, he's a good quarterback. He led Baylor to one of the best years in history. Remains to be seen if he's going to try again next year and move somewhere else. For Utah season, it was a loss. Like I say, Pac-12 weekend, they took a loss and they lost their starting quarterback as well. So it was not a good weekend to be a Ute.
No. I agree there. It's a shame as to what's happened, and hopefully he finds some good resolution to this going forward, because it is worrying that he's just quit on them like that. So, yeah, hopefully he gets some resolution for that. I'm going to finish off. There's a few losers for teams for me this week. I'll quickly go through. So the Hurricanes, I've mentioned Miami. They're having a horrible season. De'Eric King's not doing as well. You know, he's playing injured, as you said. He's not doing well. So the Hurricanes are the losers for this week. Big defeat. Ended anything they realistically want to do this season. Clemson, I'd add to that list as well. I know Clemson won, but they've played, I think it's 2 games against FBS opposition now, and they've only put up 17 points. That's not what you expect from a team like Clemson, especially when you've got a quarterback like Uiagalelei, who's there. Especially, I'm so high on him. They just look slow and lethargic at the minute, and it's taken a long time to bring this new offense in by the looks of things. And they're just not doing well, and they've dropped out the top 10 power rankings. I don't know if they'll get back in anytime soon. We will wait and see. And the third of my loser teams for this week is Boise State. They're 1-2 for this year. They obviously won. They're the Mountain Kings at the moment, Boise State. They had a really good year last year. They're just not replicating it this season. They've had a bad start, and they've pretty much already lost their title. You know, 2 early defeats. They've still got some hard games to come. I can't see them winning it from here. I don't know about you, Rye, but it's been a really bad start to them this year.
Yeah, they're out of the title race. They're not reclaiming that Mountain West Conference title, unfortunately. Bachmeier has just made too many mistakes. Like, he has looked really bad and rattled at times. The interception that was horrible against UCF that cost them the game. This weekend, like I say, that one of the game sealers, he threw another pick. People really like this kid, but he is doing himself a world of harm this year. They're looking bad. And Clemson are weird. Something's going on there, because one of their remaining 4-star running backs has just entered the transfer portal. I'm happy he's not getting touches. Lynn Dixon, I think his name is, something like that. Like I say, you've got DJ Uiagalelei. Justin Ross decided to return from neck surgery to help this kid out. And it's just struggling across the field. Like I say, I am very much under the impression I don't think they're going to make the playoff. They're the darlings, but that's another prediction. I do not see them making the playoff this year. Even if they manage to win 10, 11 games, they just look bad. Off merit and strength of schedule, they should cakewalk it. But they're not doing it, so I don't want to see them there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they should be there. Not the way they're going. Like I said, they blew out last week, but, you know, 17 points against 2 FBS teams. That's not great. You know, especially with all the weapons they've got there and the guys. They're not earning it so far. And it's going to be interesting to see how they get on for the rest of the year, because it looks like it's a rebuild for them now and it's going to take some time to get them back on schedule, but we will see. So those are some of the winners and losers from this week. So we're going to dive into some of the actual games now. In fact, I'll just hand out quickly the awards we do. So the beating of the week, biggest victory, that goes to the Texas Longhorns. They beat Rice 58-0 for a 58-point gap for victory, which is absolutely huge. The upset of the week, now there could be a few here, but I've given that to Michigan State because that was a huge result for them, and we're going to talk about that very, very shortly. And then the statement win of the week, this is another one we've mentioned. Again, there were others that could have been in here, but Fresno State putting away UCLA 40-37. That's a huge result for them, especially as UCLA have come out like a house on fire this season. They've just been, you know, putting teams to the sword, offensively looking amazing. I mean, they put up nearly 40 points again. So to go and get a victory against them is absolutely huge. So we'll be looking forward to see how they get on in the upcoming weeks now, see if they can back this result up. But we'll move into the games now. So, you know, for me, where do you want to start this week, Rye? Which game really, you know, grabbed you by the tenterhooks this week and brought you in?
I'm just going to say I think what Fresno State are doing, I'm just worrying because they're gaining too many shootouts. Like, say, 40-37, their Oregon was 38-35. Their offense is doing the job, but their defense isn't, and that's going to come back to bite them in the ass. I'd like to see them rein it in a bit on both sides and have to do less, like say. But the Pac-12, like say, they've taken them both on, and like say, they did well. So, like say, that was one of the biggest statement wins of the week. That leaves UCLA in a world of trouble. Like say, I'll quickly brush over, like say, my Arizona State's on levels. They had a big ranked matchup with BYU, who in their own right are having a great year. They lost a lot of talent, but they've managed to reload. We stunk. Jaden Daniels threw two interceptions. There was no passing scores. The player that I watch every week, everyone knows him, Robertson, he had an interception. He looked like he was going to get a pick six. Their star running back chased in the full length of the field, climbed on his back and forced a fumble, recovered, and they went down to score. That would have put us in the lead. There's photos that he might have stepped out of bounds. Herm chose not to challenge the flag, like to call it, see if he stepped out before the fumble. We just had a really bad day at the office. BYU were just very efficient. The new quarterback, Tyler Allgeier, is in it to watch out for, guys. Like, he's putting together a really good bit of work, and they got a big statement win. Like, I was hoping we were going to compete. Like I said, this hurt our chances at Pac-12 South title, but this game could have gone either way. And in the end, they beat us with relative ease later on the fourth. So that was a big name between two ranked teams. And there wasn't many ranked matchups this week, but that was tough to take.
Yeah, I didn't want to prod you with that one. I thought, if you want to bring it up, I will let you bring it up. But obviously, it was one of the big matchups. It was a ranked matchup, and it's a shame. It's a real shame for Arizona there. But like you say, BYU, full credit to them. I think I mentioned last week, they've not gone 3-0 in a season for years. This is going well back into the 1970s, I think, or something like that. It's a very, very long time. So, you know, props to them. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do this year. Because even with Zach Wilson, they didn't have such a good start to a season. And they're beating decent sides. The last two wins have been real big for them. I think they've been underdogs in both. And they've come away with victories. So, you know, fair play to them, and we'll move on. We'll not last on that long. I think the big one I loved, you know, the match I enjoyed most this weekend, I think there was a few, but one of the real big ones was Alabama and Florida. Now, there was a lot. This was a wonderful game. I think not many people gave Florida much of a hope before this one. I mentioned last week they had racked up about 750 yards in rushing offense in the first two games. Yes, it was against FCS teams, but would they be able to bring that into this game? And they did. They beat Alabama 258 yards to 91 yards on the ground. You know, it's incredibly hard to put that many rushing yards up on a Nick Saban defense. You know, they're really well drilled, but their offensive line was amazing, created lots of running lanes. The running backs, they ran hard downfield. They just were relentless And Emery Jones did sort of just enough to complement in the passing game. I think he ended up with 178 yards. He didn't throw for any touchdowns, and there was one interception in there, but I think they complemented each other just enough. And just to put into perspective how much of a challenge Florida gave to them this week, I mean, it was tough for Alabama. This game was played in Florida. It was played in front of a crowd of just under 91,000. It's the fifth largest crowd that the Gators have had in their history. That's how big the crowd was. The atmosphere was phenomenal. It must have been so tough for Bryce Young, who really, really impressed me in this one. For a first-year guy in what is third game, to go into a cauldron like that, such a fierce, hostile atmosphere, he showed himself out really well. But in terms of total yardage, this was Alabama's lowest total yardage they gained in a game since November 2018. And it's the first time they've been outgained offensively in yards since November 2019. I think, you know, Florida had about 100 more offensive yards than them in this one. They kept them quiet. It's just Alabama were very efficient with what they did. They got out to 21-3 in front after the first quarter, and you thought, uh-oh, this is going to be a blowout. The Gators aren't doing anything here. But they worked their way back into this game. They kept with the run, which at 21-3 would be understandable to go away from it. But the run is their strength. Emery Jones throwing isn't. And they stuck to the game plan. They kept at it. And it came down to the very last drive of the game. They forced a three and out really late. They were pushing forwards. And the Gators simply just ran out of time. You know, the linebackers for Alabama came up with a sack on the very last play. They just came through for them. But my God, it was a wonderful game to watch. You know, Florida really showed resilience there. And I think they showed that they are a force to be reckoned with this year. That running game especially is potent.
I think Florida will be really upset, actually, that they didn't win that game in the end, because it came down to like minor things like clock management. Like say on that final drive, there was times where they were deciding between going for a two-pointer, kicking the extra point. Like this game came down to very fine margins in the end, and it just, like I said, they ran out of steam. And this is a Florida team that actually almost won without Anthony Richardson, who people guess Cam Newton, because he's such a dynamic runner, passer. It was weird, he didn't play, but he was on the field. They saw him doing a backflip, and it was there's something weird going on there. But they stuck behind Emery Jones, who's had some of his critics, and like I said, he had the interception, like you say, didn't have any passing touchdowns, but they stuck with their bread and butter, which is brave, 21-3 down. You don't get many teams that continue to run the ball, especially, like you say. I think if they'd have had attempted more pass the clock for that final drive, I think they killed the clock too much to get back into it. Alabama will not be happy whatsoever. Like they were very lucky to get away with that. They really escaped with one there. Hostile environment, outgained so much heavily. Like say the defensive line, they really struggled. They got bullied by that strong offensive Florida line. They couldn't get much pressure on the quarterback, even though he wasn't passing. So they will just be relieved that they managed to get out of there and still remain unbeaten. Florida will be very disappointed that they didn't take it on, but I suppose there's a lot of positives to take from there going into future weeks. So overall, like I say, it was a great contest. It was very back and forth. So for a neutral, it was great to watch.
Definitely. And I love the play calling from the Gators. They just mixed it up so much. There were a lot of designed quarterback runs, but at the same time, you know, they handed it aloft to the running backs. You didn't really know what they were doing, and they threw in the passes just when they needed to. I mean, in rushing, they had four significant contributors. Malik Davis led the way. He had 86 yards and a touchdown. Emery Jones got 76 yards and a touchdown. Naquan Wright got 58 yards, averaged 8.5 yards a carry. Damian Pierce only got 24 yards, but he was the red zone guy. He got 2 touchdowns. They just mixed it up a hell of a lot. And, you know, they really gave Alabama a run for their money. And I'm with you. I think they will be disappointed. That last drive was an opportunity to get a victory there. But, you know, I come away with nothing but respect from them for this one. They were expected to get royally beaten and been 18 points down so early to come back and only lose by 2 and possibly, you know, should have won the game. You know, that's great for them. So, you know, great game. As I say, Bryce Young really stood out to me in this. That must have been such a difficult game for him. He's under such pressure, and he stood up. He ended up with 240 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. You know, he did his job. He was very accurate. You know, he was very economic with what he did. You know, great for him. And then on the defensive line, Will Anderson stood out for me. I think he's one of their linebackers alongside Christian Harris. Their linebacking core is so good. I know they lost one of the starters the other week, but they've just got so many great guys in there. And Anderson was all over the field. I'm going to take a little bit more of a look at his tape this week and see what he brings. But he was great in that one. So, you know, I'll look at him more going forward. We'll move it on now. So a lot of other big games going on this week. I think, you know, it's only fair that we give Michigan State a lot of love this week. We mentioned that, you know, they're going to Miami. It's a really tough away game against a ranked team. They've not beaten one in some time. And they blew them out, 38 points to 17. I know it was close for the first three quarters, but in that fourth one, they just ran absolutely ragged over them. Once again, the running game, you know, they mix it up so well. That's what they do for me. You know, Kenny Walker, 27 carries, 172 yards. Didn't get a touchdown, but still, that's a hell of a workload. 6.5 yards a carry there. Peyton Thorne at quarterback, 261 yards, 4 touchdowns. You know, receivers, you know, they've got a lot of guys who've got good yardage. There were 5 guys over 40 yards, I think. You know, Jalen Naylor got 2 touchdowns. They've just got so many threats there, haven't they, Ryan? And it's nice to see them doing well because they've had a few hard years, but they've just come out with their foot on the gas this year. And, you know, to go down there and twonk Miami by 21 points is no easy task for.
No, like you say, it's the fact that they managed to spread the ball around so well. Like you say, they did not focus on targeting one guy. Like you say, was it Ronnie Bell that went down? So now, like, they lost out on me. So now they've got to distribute the ball a bit better. They've got to keep defenses guessing a little bit more. Like you say, they were really good. That Speedy Naylor impressed me. I tweeted at the time, like, his touchdown. He put a horrible double move on that corner. Like, he left him for dead. It was a fantastic touchdown. Like you say, and this guy, the quarterback, I didn't even have him as a starter. Anthony Russo was the big name transfer that came from Temple. And like I say, he couldn't win out the job. So this Thorn kid is defying all expectations and living about, say, he's playing far better than people expected him to. Like I say, and with such a rushing offense, the pressure's taken off him massively. He can choose when he takes his shots. He's not forced to force anything downfield. So there's a weight lifted off his shoulders. They're playing with a nice calm about them. Like I say, it's just a nice balanced offense, and that's something that they haven't been able to say for quite a few years.
And I think, you know, the big thing for them, and obviously offensively they were great, but defensively they kept Miami down to 52 yards rushing. That was it. And they forced the game onto De'Eriq King. And I mean, he attempted 59 passes at the end of the day. He had 38 completed passes out of 59, 388 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. In receiving, Charleston Rambo was one of my favorite named players in the NCAA. He got 156 yards, 2 touchdowns as a standout in their receiving core. But you can't have your quarterback throwing 60 times in a game, especially when he's carrying an injury. That's just not a recipe for success. And this is not to take anything away from Michigan. This is a huge win and a really good one. But Miami, they're in all sorts of bother, aren't they? No run game whatsoever. Injured quarterback having to throw 60 times in a game. It's not a recipe for success. And their head coach, as you mentioned, his arse must be very, very hot now, if not scalding on that job.
Yeah, like I say, it was at home as well. Like I say, they were not happy, those Hurricane fans. Like I say, and when you abandon the run so quickly because you just can't get anything going, you've got a quarterback that it was already a bit gimpy. You're just leaving him in the firing line, aren't you? Like, they went through taking shots at him. Like I say, and he was end up throwing some needless interceptions because he was desperate. They had to get the ball down quickly. They didn't have the time to mess about, so he was taking these long, deep shots, throwing it at double coverage, and some of the cornerbacks just got lucky, mopped up some cheap interceptions, which helped just prolong the bit of agony even more and kill the game off.
Yeah, absolutely. As bad as Miami were, Spartans really good. This big result, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how long they can keep this going for, but that defense showed up against a good quarterback, and that offense is varied. It's got some really good running backs in there, decent receivers, a good quarterback who's playing a lot better than people expected. Keep an eye on them because they're probably going to carry on shocking teams for a little while now. So, yeah, Spartans, well played. Great game this week. I'll move it on now. So the other big one for me I mentioned last week, and the one I really, you know, wanted to watch more than any of the others, was probably Penn State and Auburn. And obviously this was a battle of ranked teams again. You had Cartavius Bigsby, also known as Tank, leading the Auburn rushing attack, coming up against Penn State's vaunted run defense. It was going to be interesting to see who came out on top of this one. But in the end, Penn State won out 28 to 20. Sorry, a faux pas there. Bigsby had a good game, 102 yards, two touchdowns. They put up quite a lot of yardage, but as we feared for Auburn, the run game did what it could, but when it came down to it and they needed Bo Nix to stand up and win them a game, no passing touchdowns, 185 yards passing. He wasn't able to keep them in that game. Penn State came out on top, and it's a bad defeat for Auburn at the end of the day. This one, isn't it, Ry?
Yeah, this was their chance to actually compete on the biggest stage. Like you say, Tank Bigsby, everyone knows, is one of the best backs in the nation. He did what he was asked to do. He did the job. Actually, Bo Nix just proved who I think he is. He's a total bust. Like, this kid has got so many yards. He's high up there in the Auburn rankings, but he's not done anything. I don't trust him whatsoever. Like, he does not win games. He cost him. His accuracy wasn't great in the red zone. They just crumbled. Like, their defense was really good. They got pressure in his face. Bo Nix is overrated quarterbacks in football. I would not want him, as because he just cannot be trusted when it comes to big games. A bit, he'll go out and he'll beat small fry and he'll look really good. When it comes down to it, he just can't get the job done. And stuff results like this is why Gus Malzahn and then eventually parted ways, because they just don't turn up when it matters.
No, it's very true. And they say it was disappointing from there. You were hoping that rushing attack could carry him. And to be fair, it did. They got over 200 yards rushing. But as you said, Nix, the passing game, it's just not there to accompany them. And it's a shame. But, you know, in terms for Penn State, they jumped up 5 places this week. They're now 5th in the power rankings. I know you have questions about that offense and whether it can win them a game when that defense doesn't. But, you know, Sean Clifford's having a decent enough year. He was 280 yards. 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. But I mean, he was 28 of 32. It was so economical with his throw-in in, you know, the receiving game. Jahan Dotson, 78 yards, a touchdown. Brenton Strange, 71 yards, a touchdown. You know, it's good enough to hold them against most teams, I reckon. I mean, this defense is vaunted and it's really good. And I'm looking for players on there who we can look at this season, because there are a few who should really be interesting us on there. It's a really good defense. But I think that offense is good enough to rank them against some of these bigger teams. I don't know whether you were convinced in that one or whether you still need a breakout performance from them or not as to how far they can go.
I think it was just too close a scoreline for me to say that Auburn weren't very good. I'm pretty sure they were, I think, like maybe 10, 15 points favourite. They only struggled to cover the spread like say, so they left it too long at times. Like they say, they don't always convince you on the scoreline. Like I say, defensively, they were fairly sound. So they say the word we'd use is they were efficient. Like I say, he threw what, like an 80% plus completion percentage, which is, you can't ask him much more on the quarterback. He didn't have to do too anything too flashy. He protected the ball really well, moved them down the field. Like I say, so for them, they'll be fairly happy, because this was something where, like, we saw it was a whiteout. It was nearly 100,000 people. The whole nation turned in to watch them. If they'd have lost, that would have been a huge smear on Jim Franklin's career, and this season it'd been a big block. But no, they managed to just get the job done, which I think is probably all they asked, really.
Yeah, I was just about to mention the whiteout. For those, it's their event there, and my God, it was amazing to watch. It's just another one of college football's one, you know, great spectacles and, you know, one of the things to go and see if you're over there, isn't it? It was absolutely amazing to see.
Yeah, they had a blimp. You could almost see it from Spain. White Stadium. They had flags. It's a huge ground. Like you say, it's one of the homes of football in the US that is very intimidating. I think in the end, they played a big factor in putting Auburn off. Like, Auburn couldn't handle the pressure in front of such a big, ferocious partisan crowd. And they just crumbled. They just withered away in the end.
For sure. But I mean, I think Penn State are players in the Big Ten this year. You know, I think that defense is good enough to win them again.
The Big Ten. Yeah.
I think they're players there for sure. I think they're probably the highest ranked team in the Big Ten now. Yes, they are, I believe. I'm thinking wrong, but yeah, I think they're going to do well this year. So, you know, remains to be seen, but good things coming from Penn State. Any other games catch your eye this weekend? There's still a few we haven't mentioned yet, but what caught your eye?
Oh, I watched so many, I'm trying to think.
All right, well, I'll move on for a minute then while you think there. So I think one of the other big ones that stood out, the battle in Virginia. Virginia Tech toppled by West Virginia.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we talked about Virginia Tech very glowingly a few weeks ago when they put away North Carolina, and this is a big defeat for them. I know, you know, West Virginia have the same record they do, but if Virginia Tech really wanted to solidify themselves after beating North Carolina, you've got to be beating West Virginia. There's no excuses to be losing a game like that, is there?
No. Like I say, that the ACC wide open, because Sam Howell has suddenly found form. He had a monster game. Like, North Carolina played well. Virginia, like I say, these teams out there that have a really good year in the ACC. Like Wake Forest, that was a game I watched. It was really good. And their business against Florida State, it's getting harder and harder to see Mike Norvell keeping that job, because they were not good again. Like I say, Wake Forest are unbeaten in the ACC. They've played their easier games now, but they're someone that could be very ranked pretty quickly, because they've got quite a good offense, strong defense. Cincinnati, Desmond Ridder. Like I say, we expected Indiana to cause them problems. Fortunately, that wasn't the case, because Penix Jr. did not have a good day at the office. Three receptions, kept giving them good field position. And Ridder did what he did best. He mopped up. He only needed 200 yards, and they won by a clear two scores. So I think Indiana probably got to be one of the biggest flops of the entire year. Be expecting them to come out and be contenders again in that division after what he did last year, and they have fallen flat on their face.
Yeah, I've never gotten the hype around Penix Jr. Everyone seems to think there's this massively great quarterback there, but I just don't see it consistently. Especially in a game like this, he's just flopped completely. And it's just another reason for me to justify, you know, not being as high on him as everybody else. So, you know, that was bad. I mean, the Wake Forest game, FSU were terrible. You know, maintaining control of the ball, especially. There was just so many turnovers in that game. And you can't afford that against a team like Wake Forest. You know, you've said they're having a good year. They are, for sure. Wondered how they'd handle the loss of Jamie Newman, but they seem to have done it quite admirably, and they're moving on. Another good game that was out there that I watched, I don't know if you watched it as well, but Louisville, they put away UCF 42-35. This was, you know, we watched Louisville a couple of weeks back when they got blown out by Ole Miss, and we said how disappointed we were that they didn't put up as much of a fight in this one. But this is actually quite a statement win for them to beat UCF. I mean, Malik Cunningham, the one we know is a good Malik Cunningham, turned up, you know, as a QB. It was 265 yards, a touchdown and an interception. But rushing, he led the way, 99 yards, two touchdowns. There are a lot of designed runs for him, nearly 8 yards a run. You know, the Malik Cunningham we know can be good showed up that week. And to be fair, that was a brilliant game to watch. That was just two high-powered offenses going out there, you know, in a ding-dong battle. And Louisville, huge win for them. And, you know, just rubs the salt even into the wound even more for UCF, who lost Gabriel on the last play of the game.
Yeah, like I say, it was very costly. Just weird with Louisville, because I thought they were going to cause problems week one, but they didn't. I thought, oh, they didn't look great, but they've come on leaps and bounds. And it's weird, if you look at that offense in the scheme, and you're right, what does Malik Cunningham look like? Another former Louisville quarterback. He reminds me of Lamar Jackson. like how they use him. He just, they build that offense around these tuck and run, elusive, like escaping, breaking tackles, quarterbacks. Like, nothing has changed since Lamar Jackson left. Against some of the big that stop the run well, they don't do very well. But there's times where, like say, they beat these teams that can't contain him. And Malik Cunningham has that power and escapability to take over games, and he managed to do it against this, and he took down a really big team. That's a statement win for them, I must say.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, it's just a shame we couldn't have seen this against Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, seeing this, sky's the limit now for them. It just depends if they're able to roll this tide of momentum going forward. But to do other ones for this week, I think the only other one, we've not talked about it in too much detail, but it was a big one, obviously, the Fresno State game against UCLA. This was huge. I mean, UCLA have been our sort of one of our darling teams for the first couple of weeks, but this was potentially for them a banana skin. And I think where they came down is that running game's been so efficient the first few weeks, but they shut that down this week. I mean, the quarterback, Thompson Robinson, he was the biggest rusher for 67 yards. Charbonnet, who's had an amazing year, he only got 19 yards, although he got two touchdowns. But, you know, that's been sort of their bread and butter this year, and they shut that down. But, I mean, fair enough, they didn't do bad in the pack, the receiving game. 200-plus yard receiver, Kyle Phillips, 113 yards, two touchdowns. Cam Brown, 111 yards, one touchdown. But it's a bad result for them. After putting away LSU and a statement like that, you don't want to be coming undone against someone like Fresno, do you? It just sort of undoes all the work of that big result that you've put out the first week of the season.
No, like I say, this very much brings them back down to earth again. Do you know what? I think people and coaches need to watch this game, because they need to see how Fresno State managed to stop Zach Charbonnet. It was a blueprint how to stop their run game. I'm surprised it took them, but someone managed to stop this guy that was just trundling through teams. To keep him to 20 yards is pretty remarkable. The two touchdowns, yeah, they were short yardage, like you say they were. There were goal lines, people get tackled at the one, he was punching it in. But for the other part, like you say, they managed to manage the clock by stopping the run. And that's how they won, with clock management. UCLA was scoring too frequent, too often. And in the end, they ran out of steam because the game just was too stop-start. There was no rhythm there. There was no run game. Like you say, this is massive. Like, the Pac-12 had some big losses. There's three teams, I think, on 2-1 at the top of the Pac-12 South. So it's heating up there. It's just brought it all back closer to it together. So I think it's going to be, it was a fun one to watch from a neutral. I think it's probably sent a warning out there for anyone under states, Fresno State, they're going to put 30, 40 points on you. So don't treat them like one.
No, I mean, this offense is just something that needs to be feared at the moment. Like you say, I mean, Jake Haener, I mentioned him earlier. He's one of the informed quarterbacks in the entire country at the minute. They say 455 yards, two touchdowns and an interception in this one is huge. Jalen Cropper, receiver, 141 yards and a touchdown. Josh Kelly, 120 yards, didn't get a touchdown, but still huge numbers. You know, good receivers there, capable of big 100-yard games. But not only that, they had a 100-yard rusher as well. Ronnie Rivers, he's a really good running back in his own right. 21 carries, 136 yards, two touchdowns. They're just a threat all over the pitch. They've got a great quarterback. They've got a great running back. They've got some great receivers there. As Ryan says, ignore them at your peril, because they really are a team to watch now. And I think a lot of teams are going to take a lot of notice of this, you know, going forward. They're not a team to underestimate, and they're 3-1 now. So, you know, as you say, who knows what their championship aspirations are like for their division this year? They could be players in there for absolute sure, but we'll see. Any others before we close off this one? Because, I mean, there was so many great games this week. Still a few have not been able to fit in.
I think they were the biggest high-profile ones. Like I said, the most competitive.
Oh, Yeah, sure. So we'll move on from that. So that's sort of the roundup of the main games there from week three. Before we close out this segment, I'll not go through them all individually, but out of your five guys, obviously we've got the five to watch list this year. Did any of them stand out for you this week, or did any of them do really bad? Were there any just you look at them and some stood out to you for good or for bad?
Malik Willis, he had a good week. Like say the competition's getting stiffer. Like say he did really nice on it. Say he showed that threat capability. I think he's on a nice gentle simmer. Like say hopefully he's gonna turn the heat up a bit. Like say when we get the big games. But right now he's doing no wrong. As long as he's doing no wrong, then that's fine by me and draft evaluators. Like say Mill Robertson almost changed the game of a pick. Six, but he should his willingness to play between outside linebacker and edge caused problems all game. It was his best game of the year without a doubt, even though it was our worst game. Like you say, he really showed up and be counted. I've seen people mocked today where he went 90. He's climbing. People are starting to take notice of him. Like I say, so I think it was a pretty good week from most of the guys. Corral sizzled. Like I say, anything Malik Willis can do, he accounted for 7 touchdowns on his own, and like say he is just hitting stride at the right time. He's starting to get aboard the train, so hopefully it don't derail.
Well, absolutely, and the fact is those two play each other in a couple of weeks, don't they, in a game that's already on the calendars. If you're a Lions fan and you're looking for quarterbacks for the future, that is the one college game this season I'd suggest you watch, a shootout between Malik Willis and Matt Corral. Because someone's going to step up in that game and put themselves Malik Willis is already on a national stage, and so is Corral to a degree, but they're just going to elevate themselves so high. If someone really stands out in that game and a team puts a beating on another, you know, they're going to entrench themselves well into the first round, whoever wins that, aren't they?
Yeah, these two have got big potential to sneak the first round, and it's a clash of styles. Corral wants to sit into the pot. He's got the biggest arms in football. He's a gunslinger, whereas Malik Willis likes to take his shots, throw limited if he can, but I'd say he's got nearly 100 yards rushing now on average most of the games of the year, so he's pretty much one of their leading threats on the ground, so he can kill you. You pick your poison, stop the pass, stop the run, whichever one you pick, like say he's going to beat you the other.
Yeah, and as you know, I like those kind of quarterbacks. The dual threat ones are the ones that always get me going. So hopefully Malik Willis puts on a show there. In terms of my five guys, Edifuan Olufosio, he was injured this week. Well, he had a knock this week, so they kept him. The Huskies kept him out of active duty. He got one tackle, but Washington were playing against Arkansas State. They won that game 52-3. They didn't really need to risk him in that one because Arkansas did absolutely nothing. So not much going there. Christian Harris, the linebacker for Alabama, he continues to have a decent season. He got 3 solo tackles, 3 assists, a tackle for loss against Florida in that narrow one that we mentioned. He's already up at 4 tackles for loss on the season. You know, this is a linebacker consistently getting to a backfield, attack running backs, attack quarterbacks. This is what I love so much about him. And he's just a leader on that defense. Obviously, it's concerning the amount of run yards they put up on them that game. But, you know, don't say anything about Florida's offense. It's really good. That offensive line, their running backs, they're high caliber. So you can sort of give them a pass for that. Big winner for this week was Treylon Burks. Now, through the first half of Arkansas's game, we were really worried because he got about 30 yards and KJ Jefferson was not throwing to him. He's not been throwing to him at all, but that all changed. He only caught 3 passes for the game, but the third one was a 91-yard touchdown run, basically off a screen pass. Now, this guy is 6'3 and over 230 pounds. He is a big dude. There are not many receivers of that size who can run 91 yards up a football pitch without getting caught by some sort of athletic defensive back. I mean, he just put the burners on. He went through about 3 or 4 guys and he was gone. There wasn't no one catching him. This is part of his game. He's explosive. He's got big hands for the catch and he can dominate when he gets the ball, and he's just not being able to show it this year. As I say, KJ Jefferson hasn't been throwing much. He did more in this one, and it's a big call to form for him because his run of opposition coming up is huge. They played Texas A&M in one of the games to watch this week. They're both ranked. Texas A&M are really good. It's going to be interesting to see how he does. But he finishes with three receptions, 127 yards. Finally get to see a glimpse of what he's about. And it just reminds you how impressive he is. And he absolutely needs to be under consideration going forward. Garrett Wilson, another steady day for Ohio State. 6 receptions, 70 yards. Most on the team with all that talent around him. Got a touchdown, the only passing one. Ohio State beat Tulsa, but it wasn't pretty. And Ohio State are another one who, there's something wrong there. They had a crowd of, and bearing in mind, 76,000 went to this game, and you think, oh my God, that's huge. But it's the smallest crowd since 1971. They got beaten badly by Oregon last week. The locals aren't happy. There was a lot of booing in the crowd. A lot of them left early. You saw the stands half empty coming towards the end of the game. And then they won by about 20 points, but Tulane would not go away. It was only late in the game when they really managed to get any separation to them. The locals are not happy at Ohio State at all, are they?
No, they're questioning Ryan Schroeder. Like I say, this thing's not going on. People are losing a bit of interest in this year, even though they're firmly in the Big Ten race and not doing things convicted. Like I say, they underestimated. People keep underestimating Tulane because they almost beat Oklahoma week one in a wild shootout. So we knew what they were capable of coming into this game. And Ohio State still didn't show them enough respect, and it took them far too long. And like I say, I'm not surprised that people are losing patience. Five-star running back Trevion Henderson, he's starting slowly. They're not creating holes for him. The O-line's not doing well. Like, all these weapons they've got, and they should be beating Tulane. Like, that should have been a 30-30-point win. They should be putting these teams away much better than they are, but they're making mental errors at the back, and it goes on the defense that are just not getting off the field.
Sorry, my bad. It was Tulsa, not Tulane, but that's even worse because Tulsa are 0-3 on the season and probably not even as good as Tulane are. So that's even worse from that point of view. They kept CJ Stroud to 185 yards, a touchdown and an interception. It was the difference maker was Trevion Henderson in their backfield. Now, for the first time this year, their run game came big, and Henderson, 24 carries, 277 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's 11.5 yards a carry. My God, he carried them to a victory against there. If that run game had struggled again, Tulsa could have pulled off a hell of a result. I mean, their quarterback, Davis Brin, he went for 428 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, but a hell of a day for them. And Tulsa shouldn't be that close against Ohio State after 3 quarters.
No, Ohio State defense shouldn't be giving up 500 yards in offense. That is not their stick. We've seen lots of corners drafted, like, say, back defensive linemen. They're known for that defense. And right now, they can't rely on it. What they need to do is they need to go back to basics. They've got to start running the ball, take the ball out of CJ Stroud's hands. Like, say, keep Trevion Henderson chugging now. I would just keep giving, going back to that fountain time and time again. Kill the clocks, like, say, through the air. You just start throwing interceptions, just giving us too many chances to put up these points, and it's not looking good.
No, not at all. Well, be interesting to see what happens and if this in different form continues. I mean, I'd always said there's a lot of new quarterbacks at the big schools this year, Clemson, Ohio State, and at the minute, you can see why they're having to bed in and they're not producing the best at the minute, but we'll see. And my top five, they end with Carson Strong. You've mentioned him as a loser of the week. That is true. The team didn't do well. He himself went 27 of 40, 262 yards, a touchdown and an interception. For me, I mean, this was 17 all until quarter four, so it was really close when Kansas State just blew away. But Nevada only had 25 rushing yards all game. It's very difficult for a quarterback when your running game's just not got going and it's relying on your arm to throw here. And as we mentioned with Kansas State, they've got some good defenders there. It's not the worst defense in the world. It's quite a good, well-oiled unit. And when your run game's not backing you, you're not going to get a result. So I don't know. I'm a bit indifferent for it. Yes, it's not good on paper and it's really bad for Nevada, but I'm not sure how much of it is on him. But, you know, it's something to watch out because he's not going to face opposition like this every week. And it's put maybe a first round tag out of consideration possibly, but I'm still high on him and I still maintain hope. So again, we'll see. Ending this sort of segment now, we'll just take a quick look at week four. What's standing out for you? If people are going to watch a game this weekend, Rye, where are you going to be watching this weekend?
Like off that, the Battle of Texas, the TCU, SMU rivalry, the Windsor Rusty Skillet that you cook steak on. That's a bit of a trophy. This is quite a historic rivalry because they're both quite close to the centre, like you say. So these two care a lot. They're both real. One is heavily powered by the pass. One is Max Duggan, who's a running quarterback. It's a big contrast of styles. The winner's probably going to sneak into the top 25. The loser's going to go home licking their wounds because, like I say, this game means a lot to them. So I think that's going to be a really fun one to watch. But it's come down to it being quite close.
For sure. I think this is one of my favourites as well, straight off the bat, and where I'm going to hopefully be able to watch that. I'm interested to see Tanner Mordecai after how much you've said about him. It's going to be interesting to see him proper. So we'll have a look, see how he gets on. I think one of the other big ones for me, I'm going to have my eyes fairly on Treylon Burks. Arkansas are playing Texas A&M. Texas A&M are a really good side this year, and Arkansas haven't had... I mean, they've got the hardest schedule in the country, but they're just getting to the part that's making it the hardest schedule in the country. Texas A&M, you know, are just the start of a rotten four-game streak they've got coming up. And it's going to be interesting to see if they are, you know, more than they seem on the outside. I think Texas A&M are probably going to blow this out, but I remain to be surprised, and I'm going to see what happens there. Which others are you looking at this week?
Like I said, there's some teams have just broke into the rankings, so they're now trying to keep it going. There's a big one with Wisconsin and Notre Dame, because with Notre Dame, that defense has been awfully shaky of late. Like they keep getting into these shootouts, and they keep trying to just hold teams off at the end. And that Wisconsin team is known, like say, Graham Mertz hasn't had the best season, but it's a high-powered offense. They like to go on that. So they're really going to try to stick to them. I think that's going to be one to watch. Both got a reasonable rank. I think they're both overrated in the rankings. They're both a bit too high, but I think the loser's going to have a lot to lose. So it's one where you really can't afford to lose it because you're going to be losing a lot of ground. Like I say, especially Wisconsin is such a tight Big Ten, they cannot afford to slip up this week. It would do their title championship game credentials the world of damage. Like I say, Notre Dame, Jack Cohen's been all over the place. That offensive line has just been just terrible. They've given very little chance to win, and they're just sneaking over the line. But if they think they're going to sneak over the line this week, then I think they'll be sorely mistaken.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I don't know, Notre Dame just feel like one of those who are just eking out victories, you know, in spite of, you know, you just feel like they're just going to eat their way through to maybe an unbeaten season, completely undeserved, and sneak into the playoffs. You never know, but it just feels like they've got sort of that sort of luck running with them this year. But it's going to be a hard one for them, and it'd be good to see if Wisconsin can put a win over them there. It'd certainly be a signature victory for them, because Notre Dame, they're still a good team at the end of the day, but they're just trying to find their way a little bit. Obviously, I'm going to be watching Michigan State again. I'll try. They're playing Nebraska. They should win that one, but this is exactly the type of banana skin which they could slip on after such a big win, isn't it? I mean, Nebraska aren't good this year, but you just get this nagging feeling they could lose this one, don't you?
Yeah, but this is the kind of game you kind of like, yeah, they're just going to not go into that game focused, or they're going to have a terrible day and they're going to make turnovers. Nebraska are just going to capitalize and eke out a low scoring win. Like, this has got banana skins written all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I hope they carry on the way they are. So it's about time they had some good fortune. So, you know, I wish all the best to them, and hopefully they do well, and I'll be watching it very closely. So those are some of the bigger games on there, but are there any upsets you see happening this week? Because you've been pretty good with your upsets this year. Me, not so much, but you look at quite a lot of the ranked teams and you don't see, there's not too many that jump out to me anyhow, where there's a potential banana skin between ranked and unranked. I mean, maybe Stanford against UCLA, I don't know. You know, Stanford are hit and miss. I know they're not the best, but they can still pull out a result when they need to. But is there anyone else who you see causing an upset this week?
Yeah. I've had a look at this. Due to injuries and, like, the nature, I think Oklahoma State can knock on Kansas State. Like, say, the Oklahoma State are ranked, but I'm pretty sure they're 3-0. Like, they've had a pretty good start to the season under Spencer Brown. Reasonably good defense, so I think they could very much snatch the Wildcats, because they're dropping like flies player wise. That will not be an easy team. Like I say, I think the Cowboys can get done, and I think they'll can eke out a close win again, like they did against Boise State.
Yeah, I agree there. That probably looks the most likely out of them all. I mean, it's hard. I mean, Oklahoma play West Virginia. I know West Virginia have just knocked off Virginia Tech. Oklahoma's probably maybe a step up too far, but you just never know with some of these games, do you? If you can knock off Virginia Tech, you've got a chance.
Yeah, we've seen that Oklahoma have been vulnerable. Look at week one, look at what their defense did against, likes of Tulane. Also, like, they ship a few points, and you never know which Spencer Rattler you're going to get. You don't know how efficient he's going to be. West Virginia have got nothing to lose. Jarrett Doige, the quarterback, like I say, they're coming off a big morale. They should be going to that game brimming with confidence, thinking, we could go in here, we could cause a huge upset. And like I say, we're going to take some plaudits. It's a free shot at Oklahoma, this, and they need to grasp it with both hands.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great for them if they were able to continue this on. They'd probably become the giant killers of the league if that was the case. But, you know, I don't know. Oklahoma do seem to be finding their footing now, but they've shown that they're vulnerable, so who knows? But they're some of the big games to watch out for week four anyhow, some upsets, some big games. So hopefully we'll have another good slate on there, although there are quite a lot of one-sided ones with the rankings this week. So do expect a few big beatings as well. We'll end the week four preview there, and we're gonna finish off with our last segment. Don't think we'll spend too long on this one, because at the minute it's only week three and we can't really give definitive answers to this one yet. But Ashley's asked us, you know, our Ashley on Twitter, he's asked us which highly thought of prospects in this draft, possibly the round one guys at the minute, would you want the Lions to avoid? So, Ryan, if you're thinking about the guys who are getting, you know, ranked in the first round, possible first rounders for this year, is there anyone who sort of sticks in your mind right now who you're like, don't want them? There's something, whatever it is just putting you off them.
I don't want us to do something silly like think we're going to strengthen the... let's go back to the that we're doing now. Let's stay away from defensive line like that. I think it's Neil from Texas A&M. Like, he's one of the high defensive lines. Like, if we're going to lose one of these guys on the outside, I think if we did pick it like 6 or 7, he'd be very interesting to them. But I think that is the totally wrong direction to go for. That'd be playing it too safe. Like, I don't want anyone along that defensive line. I'm not that keen on Thibodeau, only because I think it's a decent position. Like, see, you can get George Karlaftis after. You can get that Anthony Hutch that's at Michigan. So there's some good defensive ends out there. So I'd like to stay away from Thibodeau if we can, because I don't feel like he's the what brings us instant starter success. I think there's more positions with greater need than on the defensive line.
And with Thibodeau, I think we have to wait to see how this injury subsides as well, haven't we? Because I know there's durability issues now, possibly, if this keeps him out a while. The last thing we want is someone who has a sketchy injury history. I mean, I don't think he's played the last few weeks, has he? I think he's due back this week, possibly, I believe. Or is he still out?
I think he's day-to-day, but I'm pretty sure he's trending towards playing this week.
Ah, we'll see. But yeah, I suppose the durability is a thing there. I mean, for me, obviously, it's only 3 weeks in the season. I don't want to call anyone's number yet because it is early. But if we're talking about preferences, I don't want to go near Derek Stingley Jr. And that's purely because I don't. He's going to go top three, I reckon. If we're picking at three again, I don't want to go corner again. We've just done that and it's not worked so far. But for me, you know, that first game against UCLA, he struggled. He got burned on a couple of deep balls. There were some coverage issues. I know he's got better in recent weeks and he's, you know, fulfilling his draft type, but I just don't want to go corner again so high in the draft. I mean, I'm done with it now. I think we need to go elsewhere for corner. You know, we've got a few young, talented guys here, so hopefully it's not going to be an issue anyhow, but he's one I want to avoid there. And for me, I'm not set on a quarterback yet either. Obviously, I'm trending towards not really wanting one in the next draft. I'd rather Goff have a chance when, you know, he's put in a position to succeed. But I think outside of Malik Willis, where we would be picking players right now, where we would be picking all these quarterbacks roughly, for me, they're not value for money yet. I don't know whether you agree on that one there, but there's no one apart from Willis who I'd probably sell the house for at the minute at that position. I won't be picking Rattler at one. I might not be picking Howell there either. I don't know. Is that just me, or are you similar with the quarterbacks?
I've had to stay well away from Rattler. I just don't. He has got potential bust all over him. I'd say I'd rather take Thibodeau. If I have to choose between him and Thibodeau, I'll take my chances on Thibodeau. I just don't like Rattler at the next level. I don't trust him. Howell, I think he's going to go somewhere between after we've picked and we pick again, because I think we're going to be picking towards the end of the first. I get what you mean. Like you said, good chance that Corral, Willis, they could very well fall out the first. And if that happens, it would actually be a dream scenario. Like if we could be in a great choice of having all these guys to choose from in a second. And I'd be willing to use a second on one of these guys and hope they come good. Like you, I am leaning towards Malik Willis just because I think that's the way the league's moving forward. Someone that's got that escapability, like he's got that natural dual threat nature, I'd say. So I think he's very much in the Trey Lance mold. He could sit a year under Goff, like say they're doing with Jimmy G. Like say, let's go Cam Cop at the 49.
Yeah,
quarterbacks.
Yeah, there's not really. I mean, if
thinking,
Aiden Hutchinson's been marked quite high in some drafts, I wouldn't want to be taking him with the first pick we've got for sure, because I've seen him go really high in some. You know, I wouldn't want him with the first. If you're looking at the second pick in the first, quite possibly, especially if he carries on having the season he's having, but not some of the predictions of us taking him with our first pick for sure. I think I'd be staying well away.
Yeah, I'd say if it was between like 20 and 30, I can consider it depending on what we do with the first. Like I said, is that there's George Karlaftis, the Greek defensive end from Purdue. He's also having a stellar year, so he could be someone like say could take the end of the first, the second. There's a lot to work with. Receivers wise, like say go, but I've got issues with, like Justin Ross because of the neck injury. Like you don't know what's going to happen with his future. Like say it just takes one hard hit from him. That's it. He'll never play again. Like say he's got that black mark and ready from having a serious injury. So someone you might want to avoid later on at the end of the first if he has a stellar year. So there's guys out there that I prefer to take a punt on in the second, knowing we've got further capital down the line. It's not rare. It's very rare that we have two first-round picks. We've got to hit on at least one of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for me, I think it's just more it's me schematically at the minute. Not really something against players. Obviously, there's a lot of time to go, but yeah, there are some that I wouldn't be going near just because I don't think we need to be drafting them that high, etc. But we'll see. We'll be able to give a more definitive answer more as the season goes, but I think we'll leave that one for there. Is there anything else you want to mention on this one? So I think we've just come to about the end of everything today. Is there anything else that you want to mention before we sign out this week?
No, I don't think so. I think that's it. We covered it all. Like I say, it was a long week. Like I say, week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot of good football this weekend. A few good segments in there. So, yeah, I mean, keep bringing it on. There's a lot to chat about every week, which is always the best thing for us. So, yeah, I say, long may it continue. So that's everything from us today. In terms of the next episodes coming up on the podcast, obviously tomorrow we on our main podcast will be taking a look at the Baltimore Ravens preview coming up this weekend. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, we're looking at this through the eyes of the Grim Reaper, possibly because Lamar Jackson is coming to town and it could very well not be pretty, especially after what they did to Kansas the coming, you know, weekend just gone. So, you know, let's tune into that one to see if there are any dissenting voices that maybe still think we can win that. But, you know, it's going to be very tough. And I think that's going to be reflected in some of our predictions. As for here on the College Pod, we'll be back next week, Wednesday, the 29th of September. We're going to be reviewing week 4, previewing week 5. As always, you know, if there's any players you want us to take a look at, positional groups, anything, just drop us a comment, drop us a message. We'll look through them as we see. We've done 2 this week. Thanks to Ashley and Ferg for your questions. It's given us plenty to chat about. So keep them coming. But yeah, all that remains really to be doing now is to sign out with the socials. So as I say, if you want to find us, you can find us on most social media outlets. So on YouTube, you can find us at Roar of the Lions UK. On Twitch, Twitter, and Instagram, you can find us at ROTL_UK. Facebook, our Facebook page, Roar of the Lions UK, and our Facebook group, Detroit Lions Fans UK, One Pride Worldwide. And of course, you can find us on our website as well. That's www.roarofthelionsuk.com. As always, articles coming out all the time about the Lions season. There's some coming up about the draft soon. We're going to do some little previews. We've seen some mock drafts going out already. Maybe too early for those, but they'll be coming very soon. So yeah, you can find us on all sorts. Just, you know, get in touch with us, interact. We're getting a lot of, you know, Twitter's blowing up at the minute. Instagram's doing really well. Of course, we always thank you for any interaction you give with us here. If you're watching the show, listening to it, we appreciate you very much. And, you know, please carry on doing so because, say, we really appreciate it. But apart from that, just remains me to thank Ryan again for another good show. Been a bit of a long one this week, but as I say, a lot to talk about. And that's never a bad thing, is it, Ry?
No, it's always good. I'd just like to add for all the people watching, listening, if there's any Lions fans about in the north, head over to the UK Ravens, go on their social medias, reach out to them. They're having a meet. They've got tickets available. You get drinks with a ticket. It's in Leeds City Centre. If you want to meet them, there's some Lions fans going that they've told me. So reach out to them. They're a great set of people. They say they'll be there to watch the game on Sunday evening. So they're looking for more people to attend. Another episode. I joined them last night for their review podcast. Got to chat with them, and that should be dropping soon. So, like I say, reach out to them. Like I say, anyone here, like I say, if anyone ever wants to organize meetups, just come in the Discord. Like I say, ask for the details and join. And we're getting more and more people joining.
Ah, yes, I forgot the Discord. We've got that many socials now that it's so hard to keep up. Matt's usually the guru with all that, who can list them all off one by one. But yeah, there's a good meetup going on the weekend. So as Ryan says, if you want to get in touch with them, UK Ravens, they're all there. But, you know, just remains for me to thank Rye for the week. And we shall see you again on the College Podcast in 7 days and on the main one again tomorrow. So until then, One Pride.
One Pride.